Growing up in Wildwood, New Jersey means growing up with sand between your toes and the sound of waves crashing like a lullaby every night. You get used to the seasonal pulse, quiet winters with closed shops and empty streets. Then suddenly Memorial Day hits, and the town explodes with tourists, arcade lights, and that constant smell of boardwalk fries and pizza. Life's not all beach parties and boardwalk games, though. At home, things have been tough. Dad lost his job at the shipyard last winter, and Mom's been pulling double shifts at the diner just to keep us afloat. So when I turned 16, I signed up to be a lifeguard. Not just because I heard girls dig lifeguards, but because the pay was decent, and I figured I'd be helping out. Despite being on the swim team since middle school, the training was brutal. The Atlantic isn't your friendly neighborhood pool. It's wild and unpredictable. Coach drilled us hard on rescues and rough surf, first aid until we could wrap bandages in our sleep, and the dreaded 500-meter swim against the clock. I finished every session with my muscles screaming and my lungs burning, tasting salt on my lips, whether from sweat or the sea. I couldn't tell. Being a lifeguard has its perks, though. The view from the stand is unbeatable. Miles of ocean, spectacular sunrises, and a front row seat to the world waking up. The community gives respect, too. You're seen as a local hero, whether you're rescuing a lost kid or treating a jellyfish sting. Plus, local shop owners often toss free food and drinks our way. A nod to the hard work and long hours we put in on the beach. It's a small town perk that never gets old. Up in the watchtower, I lean back in the creaky wooden chair that's seen better days, my eyes scanning the horizon where the sky meets the sea. It's a slow day, the kind that falls in the lull between the fireworks of July 4th and the last hurrah of Labor Day. The beach isn't deserted, but it's not the wall-to-wall blanket mess of high season either. A few families dot the sand, kids building sandcastles and chasing waves, while a couple of older tourists brave the chilly water with tentative steps. The radio crackles occasionally, with chatter from the main station, but mostly it's just the cry of seagulls and the distant laughter of kids. I'm halfway through scanning my usual zone when I hear a voice from behind. "Hey, Watchtower Dreamer, you saving any lives today or just the flies?" I turn to find Tori Ellis, leaning against the door frame with that lopsided grin that's always spelled trouble. Tori, with her sun-bleached hair, always tied back in a reckless bun, and the kind of tan lines that tell stories of long summer days, spent outdoors. Tori and I have run in the same circles forever, or at least since we both started doggy paddling at the YMCA, though Tori has always been one step ahead. She's just a year older than me, but it feels like more. When I was fumbling through my first awkward swim meet, she was already setting school records. By the time I caught up to join the team, she was the captain. She always seemed just a bit out of reach, always a grade ahead and, in my mind, miles too far. I manage a smile, shaking off the saltwater fog of my daydreams. Just keeping an eye on the horizon, you know, in case the Kraken decides to show up today. "Kraken, huh?" Tori chuckles, the sound bright against the muted backdrop of waves. "Well, if one shows up, I guess we'll just have to wrestle it back into the deep." "That's a deal," I say with a nod. I can't help but notice the brand new Rutgers University hoodie she's wearing over her lifeguard uniform. It's not the first time I've seen her in it, but today, it feels like a glaring reminder that this is her last summer before she heads off to college, leaving this beach and possibly me behind. It's a stupid thing to get hung up on, considering she's still right here. But it feels like a billboard for all the things I'm about to miss. I look down, tracing patterns in the weathered wood of the watchtower floor, suddenly feeling the weight of the coming changes. Tori notices the shift in my demeanor, her expression softening just a touch, a silent understanding passing between us. She has always been able to read me like an open book. "What's with the long face, huh? You look like someone just told you summer's canceled." "Just thinking about stuff, you know?" Yeah, I know, she starts, her voice softening. Hey, I know exactly what'll cheer you up. She fishes into the pocket of her hoodie, her movements teasing and slow, building the suspense like she's about to pull out a winning lottery ticket. Instead, she reveals a familiar, crinkly packet of saltwater taffies, the kind that sticks to your teeth and tastes like every childhood summer rolled into one. Emergency stash, she declares with a wink, holding the packet out to me. I can't help but smile as she tosses the packet into my lap. What'd I do without you? Starve, probably, she quips, settling down beside me on the creaky chair. The old wood groans under our combined weight. Or die of boredom. Take your pick, kid. I roll my eyes, unable to suppress a grin. Kid? Come on, you're only like 12 months older than me. That doesn't give you any ancient wisdom or anything. 12 months is plenty, she counters. Her tone playful, yet edged with a hint of that so-called adult wisdom. A lot can happen in a year. You'll see when you hit my old age. Yeah, like forgetting where you put your dentures, I shoot back. Tori bursts out laughing, the sound so carefree it almost makes the day seem brighter. As she laughs, her sunglasses slip slightly, revealing the edge of a black eye, stark against her sun-kissed skin. My stomach tightens as I ask, Hey, what's going on with your eye? She quickly adjusts her sunglasses back down, a bit too hastily. Oh, this? She tries to laugh it off, waving her hand dismissively. You should see the other guy, right? It was just a surfing mishap, caught a rogue board to the face. I lean forward. I'm not buying this story. Tori, come on. We've known each other since we were kids. I know when you bullshit me. She stiffens, the easy smile fading from her face. Josh, it's nothing really. Is he hitting you again? I cut in, my voice low but firm. I've known Tori's dad long enough to suspect the worst. He's the type who smiles in public and lets his fist talk behind closed doors. She bites her lip, her posture stiffening. Seriously, let's just drop it, okay? But I'm already past the point of brushing it aside. You shouldn't have to cover up for him, Tori. Just drop it, Josh. She cuts me off, her voice sharp, but it breaks on the last word. I ball my fists, feeling helpless and angry. He can't just keep doing this to you. I swear to God. Or what? Tori interrupts, her voice slicing through my rising fury. My dad is the deputy mayor. He's got the police in his pocket. You go stirring things up, and he won't just sit back. He'll have you locked up, or worse. Her eyes dart around, making sure no one's listening. I've got one more month until I'm out of here, and I can manage it until then. I clench the lifeguard tower's old wooden railing, frustration boiling inside me. 1 month of dodging fists? That's 1 month too many, Tori. She shakes her head, the loose strands of her bun fluttering in the salty breeze. It's not just about me, Josh. It's about my mom, my little brother. The fallout, it crushed them. I can't do that to them. Not when I'm so close to leaving. Seeing her so resigned, the fight draining out of her, it made my chest tighten. I began to say that she couldn't, but the words trailed off as my lifeguard instincts kicked in. I caught something out of the corner of my eye, a disturbance in the water, far offshore. My heart skipped as I grabbed the binoculars, hanging by the window, the argument with Tori momentarily forgotten. Peering through the lenses, the ocean came into sharp focus, and there it was. A solitary figure, arms flailing wildly. They're too far out, way beyond the safety zone where the buoys bob lazily in the swell. My stomach knots as I watch them struggle against the pull of the current, unmistakably drowning. Shit, Tori. There's somebody out there. Tori's by my side in a heartbeat, her own quarrels forgotten as she follows my gaze. What? Where? She asks, squinting into the distance. Directly east from the big rock, about 300 yards out. I hand her the binoculars and start throwing on my rescue gear, a flotation device and a first aid kit. My hands are steady despite the pounding in my chest. This is what all those grueling training sessions were for. Tori's already on the radio, calling in the situation to the main station. Tower 3 to base. We've got a possible drowning, far east end past the buoy line. We need backup and an ambulance on standby. I nod, taking a deep breath as I sling the rescue buoy over my shoulder. We're in action mode now, muscle memory taking over as we haul the old rowboat off its stand and towards the water. The boat's paint is chipped and it creaks a bit too much for comfort, but it's been through more storms than most lifeguards can count. As we drag the boat towards the churning water, I blow my whistle sharply. People scatter, clearing a path straight to the surf. "Keep back! Emergency!" I yell over the roar of the waves. We push it into the surf, the cold Atlantic splashing against our legs, sharp as needles. "On my count," I yell over the roar of the waves, gripping the oars tight. 1, 2, push. The boat lurches forward, cutting through the incoming tide. We jump in and I take the oars, pulling with all my strength. Tori keeps her eyes fixed on the spot where we last saw the flailing arms, her voice crisp and focused as she guides me. "Left a bit. Keep it steady, Josh. He's out there. Just keep going." Every row feels like a battle against the ocean, but there's no room for hesitation. The waves are relentless, tossing our little boat like a toy, but I row with everything I've got. My arms are burning, my breath ragged. But there's a life at stake, and every second counts. "There," Tori points ahead, her voice urgent. I see it too now, a head bobbing desperately in the water. We're so damn close. "Hang on," I shout to the victim, hoping my voice carries over the waves. As we approach, the scene before us turns grim. The water around the swimmer is a dark crimson color, spreading out in a sinister cloud. My gut twists at the sight. It's clear he's injured, badly. The oars dig into the water, each stroke a desperate attempt to close the distance between us and the struggling swimmer. But as we draw nearer, a shape breaks the surface. A dorsal fin, sleek and ominous, cutting through the waves like a knife. Then another, and another. My heart drops, ice flooding my veins as I realize what we're up against. "Bull sharks," I mutter under my breath, barely loud enough for Tori to hear. But she does. Her eyes widen, the color draining from her face. I toss Tori the rescue buoy. She's on her feet in an instant, balancing against the boat's rocking as she leans out to throw the buoy. It lands with a splash right next to the swimmer. "Grab on," she commands. The swimmer makes no attempt to grab it, which bobs uselessly beside him. Tori's voice cracks as she shouts again, urgency giving way to desperation. "Come on, take it." But he doesn't respond, doesn't even seem to see it. My stomach churns as I squint through the salt spray, trying to understand why he's ignoring the lifeline we've thrown him. And that's when I see it. Something off about his movements. They're too jerky, unnatural. As we draw closer, the truth hits me like a rogue wave. It's not just a swimmer. "What the hell?" Tori breathes out, her voice trembling. The swimmer has elongated limbs, unnaturally pale skin that almost glows under the sun, and eyes, dark, void, that don't reflect any light. As the waves lap around him, his form shifts, less human and more something else. It becomes increasingly clear that there's something profoundly wrong. Where I expected to see legs kicking frantically for survival, there's nothing. The lower half of the figure isn't human at all. It's as though he's merged with something else, something massive and obscured beneath the waves. The sharks, drawn by the blood, begin to circle faster, their movements more frenzied. They dive in, their powerful jaws snapping shut on the figure's pale limbs, tearing away chunks of flesh. Each attack sends a new wave of blood billowing out, darkening the blue water with a thick, ominous red. Tori and I stare, horrified, as the feeding frenzy intensifies. More sharks appear, attracted by the scent of blood, their bodies slicing through the water with ruthless efficiency. One of the larger bulls, easily 8 feet long and solid muscle, slams into our boat. The impact is like a sledgehammer blow, jarring every bone in my body. The old rowboat lurches dangerously to the side, and Tori, unprepared for the sudden movement, stumbles. For a heart-stopping moment, it looks like she's going to fall right into the middle of the bloody fray. "Tori!" I shout, lunging towards her. My hand clamps down on her arm just as her body tips over the side, half in, half out of the boat, dangling dangerously close to the frenzied water. Her eyes are wide, fear etched across her face, but she clings to my arm. Her grip is desperate as mine. Pulling with all the strength left in me, I haul her back into the relative safety of the boat. We collapse in a heap, gasping, our breaths harsh against the sound of snapping jaws and splashing water. Tori's face is just inches from mine, and for a split second, the chaos around us dims, drowned out by the pounding of my heart. As we catch our breaths, huddled together in the bobbing boat, a new terror begins to unfold. Below the turmoil of splashing and blood, deeper in the water, a pair of large, glowing orbs start moving towards the surface. They burn coldly in the murky depths, like ghostly lanterns summoning us to the unknown. The sharks, frenzied as they are, seem oblivious or perhaps indifferent to the deeper menace rising from below. "Josh," Tori whispers, her voice barely audible over the chaos. "What is that?" I don't have an answer, not one that makes any sense at least. But every instinct screams that it's something far worse than sharks. The water around the orbs begin to bubble and froth, a sign that whatever owns those eyes is massive, and it's coming up fast. I don't know, but we can't stick around to find out. I shove the oars into the water, pulling with more strength than I knew I had. The boat cuts through the waves, each stroke pushing us further from the nightmarish scene, unfolding behind us. Tori, with her usual quick thinking, grabs the second set of oars. "On it," she says, her tone all business now. Together we row, our movements synchronized, driven by the urgent need to put as much distance as possible between us and whatever is surfacing. The shape beneath the water grows clear, its vast size dwarfing our little rowboat. As it rises, the surface of the water bulges ominously. And then, with a gut-wrenching sound of displacement, massive jaws breach the surface. It's lined with rows of serrated teeth, each one big enough to sever limbs with a single bite. The air fills with a putrid stench of decay, and a grotesque assembly of scales, barnacles, and sinus tendrils clinging to what can only be described as a nightmare made flesh. The ocean erupts around us, waves crashing against the boat like the blows of a giant. The boat rocks violently, threatening to capsize with each giant wave created by the beast's movements. The massive creature emerges further, each of its movements causing the sea around us to roil and swell with a terrifying force. The sky above seems to darken as its massive bulk blots out the sun, casting long, ominous shadows across the water. The ocean becomes a cauldron of chaos. Above the surface, the creature's enormous jaws clamp shut with a sound like thunder, its rows of jagged teeth ensnaring the hapless sharks. They thrash violently, caught in the creature's merciless grip, but it's a futile struggle. Like minnows ensnared in a net, they are swallowed whole, disappearing into the cavernous maw that seems almost to distort the water around it with its sheer mass. "Holy shit," Tori says next to me. As the creature resubmerges, the water around us behaves like it's being sucked down a colossal drain. The pull is so strong, it feels like the ocean itself is trying to consume. Our rowboat, tiny and insignificant against its force, starts to tilt dangerously, the stern dipping into the swirling vortex. Suddenly, a monster wave, larger than any before, rears up like a behemoth. It's a towering wall of water, frothing at its crest, bearing down on us with the full wrath of the sea. My heart leaps into my throat, and for a moment, everything seems to slow down. I see Tori's eyes widen, the sky darkening above, the sheer power of nature bearing down on us. And then the wave crashes. The impact is titanic. Our boat is thrown like a toy, spinning uncontrollably. I lose my grip on the oar, my hands numb and slick with sea spray. I'm tossed sideways, and for a horrifying second, I'm airborne, flung towards the churning waters. "Tori," I manage to yell before the cold ocean envelopes me, muffling my cry. The water is shockingly cold, a brutal embrace that saps my strength instantly. I struggle against the pull, disoriented, my lungs burning for air. Just as I feel the darkness creeping at the edges of my vision, a strong grip encircles my wrist. It's Tori. She's beside me in the water. With remarkable strength, she hauls me back towards the semi-submerged boat. Together, we fight the ocean's grip, struggling back into the battered vessel. "Come on, Josh. We ain't dying today," she yells. We manage to right the boat, clinging to it as another wave lifts us and then drops us into a sickening plunge. As the creature descends into the depths, the chaos of the ocean subsides with unnatural speed, like a nightmare fading at dawn. The water around us grows strangely still, eerily calm. The monstrous waves that had just threatened to swallow us whole now retreat, leaving behind only the gentle lapping of water against our boat. The sky above brightens slightly, casting pale light on the slick surface of the sea. It's as if the ocean itself wants to forget the horror it just unleashed. Tori and I sit in our battered rowboat, soaked to the bone, breathing heavily from exertion and fear. We exchange glances, our eyes wide with the shared terror of what we've seen. The only sounds now are the distant cries of seagulls circling above, their sharp squawks a reminder of normalcy. They dive and swoop, their white bodies contrast against the gray sky, searching for any scraps thrown up by the recent disturbance. But even their presence feels off, as if they too sense the unnatural calm. Exhausted and still reeling from the ordeal, Tori and I row the battered boat back towards the shore. Each stroke is labored, our muscles burning from the exertion and adrenaline finally wearing off. The coastline looks impossibly distant, but the terror of what lurks beneath propels us forward, urging us to the safety of land. As we near the beach, the mundane scene is surreal. Kids are still building sandcastles and tourists are sunbathing, oblivious to the nightmare that unfolded just beyond the buoys. But as we drag our boat onto the sand, our soaked uniforms and wild looks draw immediate attention. "Call 911, I yell to the nearest bystander, my voice hoarse. Within minutes, the local police and paramedics arrive, their vehicles cutting through the sandy landscape. Tori and I are pulled aside, wrapped in blankets despite the summer heat as we shiver, not just from the cold, but from the shock. Paramedics check us over for injuries, their faces a mixture of concern and disbelief as we recount what happened. The Coast Guard was called in, and by late afternoon, a flotilla of boats dotted the horizon, including a couple of oceanographic research vessels that had been redirected to investigate our reports. The beach was officially evacuated, yellow tape fluttering in the sea breeze as tourists were gently but firmly asked to pack up and leave. Local news crews, having caught wind of the incident, arrived with cameras and microphones, eager to capture the story. Tori and I were too shaken to speak on camera. In the days that followed, the beach remained closed. The water was patrolled continuously by boats equipped with sonar and other research equipment, trying to detect any further signs of the creature or its whereabouts. Scientists and marine biologists were brought in, providing their expertise, hypothesizing about what the creature could be. Was it a dormant, deep-sea species, or something unknown entirely? The incident became the talk of the town, and soon, a wider curiosity. Articles about historical sea monster sightings resurfaced, and everyone had a theory or a tale to share. As the investigations continued, without any conclusive findings, life in Wildwood gradually started to return to normal. The beach reopened, albeit with a new warning sign and an increased number of patrols. Tourists returned, a little more cautious, but still eager to enjoy the sun and the sand. Then, the day finally arrived. It's a sticky August morning, and the sun is already high, casting sharp shadows across Tori's driveway as we loaded the last of her boxes into the back of her well-worn hatchback. She's managed to fit her whole life into a series of suitcases and cardboard boxes, each one labeled with a marker in her slanted handwriting. There's a moment of silence between us, filled with everything we're both feeling but aren't quite ready to voice. So, save some of the partying for when I start next year, okay? I say, trying to keep the mood light. Can't have you experiencing all that fun without me. Dory bumps her shoulder against mine, a soft smile on her lips. That's a deal, but you have to promise to visit, okay? I chuckle, shifting the last box into place, securing it with a bungee cord. You're not worried it'll look kind of lame for a college girl to be seen hanging out with a high school kid, are ya? I tease, arching an eyebrow as I glance over at her. The morning breeze lifts strands of her brunette hair, which she brushes back absentmindedly. Tori laughs, her blue eyes crinkling at the corners. Oh, please, like I care about that. You'll probably be cooler than half the guys I meet there anyways. And besides, how many of them can say they encountered the Kraken and live to talk about it? She nudges me playfully with her elbow, the tension from our earlier days dissipating like the morning mist. I'm really gonna miss this. Miss you, she murmurs, her voice tinged with a sincerity that catches me off guard. The weight of her impending departure suddenly feels all the more real. I swallow, my heart thudding loudly in my chest. Yeah, I'm gonna miss you too, Tori. She bites her lip, hesitating for a moment before reaching up to touch my cheek. It's a simple gesture, but it sends a jolt through me, electric and warm. I lean into her touch, closing the gap between us. Our eyes lock, and everything else fades away. The sound of distant waves, the cries of the seagulls, the rustle of the leaves. It's just Tori and me, and the years of unspoken feelings that have built up between us. Gently, I cup her face with my hands, her skin soft under my fingertips. Before you go, I start, and she nods, understanding immediately. There's no need for more words. I lean in and our lips meet. It's a sweet kiss, tentative at first, but growing more confident as we both give in to it. Her lips are warm, and they taste faintly of the saltwater taffy. We should do that more often. Tori jokes, her voice light, but her eyes are serious. Yeah, I agree. My voice rough with emotion. We certainly should. We linger by the car for a few more moments, neither of us eager to end it. Text me when you get there, okay? And she nods. I will. Don't worry, I'll spam you so much you'll get sick of me. I laugh, but there's a tightness in my throat. Tori tosses me one last smile before she slides behind the wheel. As she drives away, I watch until her car is just a speck on the horizon, the road dust settling back down and the quiet of the day wrapping around me like a comforting blanket. I'm not sure what the future holds, but for the first time, I'm ready to face it with an open heart. I stroll over to the dunes with my hands in my short pockets, my feet sinking slightly into the warm sand. The sun is high enough now that its rays feel like gentle fingers, not yet the pressing palm of the midday heat. I climb to the top of a dune and sit down, pulling my knees close. From here, I have a perfect view of the Atlantic, stretching out endless and deep. The Jersey Shore is peaceful today, deceptive in its calm. Families are arriving, setting up umbrellas and laying out blankets. Kids running towards the waves with shrieks of delight. A part of me keeps scanning the horizon, though, half expecting to see those jaws reach the surface one more time.